Transportation Committee will come to order. Today we're going to get an overview from the Department of Transportation, and Ms. McKenzie and Ms. Parker are going to be giving us the department's view on where we're at right now. So if you both want to come to the table, and if folks could hold their questions until Ms. McKenzie and Ms. Parker are done with their presentation, things will go a little bit smoother. So write your questions down, and we'll acknowledge the senators after the presentation is over. Ms. Parker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Betsy Parker from the Department of Transportation. I'm going to go first, and I just have a short introduction to the department, and then Ms. McKenzie will speak. First of all, I just should tell you, in case there's any confusion, this is not a budget overview. This is just sort of an introduction to MnDOT. There will be a budget overview after the governor's budget is released and budget hearings are scheduled. So if you would, you each have a packet in front of you, I think. If you would just take that up and turn to the first page. The first thing we wanted to show you is an organization chart of the department. Some of you have probably seen this already, but it might be new to some of you. The Department of Transportation was created by the legislature in 1976, and they combined some existing agencies to make the Department of Transportation. They combined the Highway Department, the Department of Aeronautics, the Department of a segment of the Department of Public Service, and part of an agency called the Railroad and Warehouse Commission that regulated railroad operations and truck operations in the state. The Department of Transportation has more than 4,700 employees. And this chart basically lays out the structure of the department, with the Lieutenant Governor serving as our commissioner. And at the moment, we don't have a deputy commissioner, but I'm sure we will again. And then the department is divided into six divisions. And the department functions through those divisions. The first division is finance and administration, which basically deals with all of the fiscal matters and human resources. And you can see that it has listed here affirmative action, civil rights, and Drive to Excellence, which is a program administered or managed through the Department of Administration to make all state functions more efficient. And then we have a program management division that carries out the view that was important at the time MnDOT was created, was that the department should not just be a highway agency, that it should be multimodal, that it should address more modes than just the road. And so as a result of getting those other agencies included, we now have an aeronautics office, a freight and commercial vehicle operations, which includes the function of ports and railroads, the Office of Investment Management, which is directed by Abby McKenzie, which basically manages all of MnDOT's funding, in particular the federal funds, and the Transit Office, which makes grants to outstate transit operations. The management of the transit function in the state is split, with the Metropolitan Council and Metropolitan Transit Operations being responsible for transit in the metro counties, and MnDOT being responsible for making grants to and overseeing the use of those grants in the outstate counties. And then we have an engineering services division, and you can look at that list and see that that division comprises a lot of technical functions that go into, that are part of all of our different operations, an operations safety and technology division that includes electronic communications. The Department of Transportation has the responsibility for owning, building, and operating the statewide public safety radio system. And that includes other agencies as well, the Department of Public Safety and State Patrol Communications, DNR, and connections to local emergency responders. And then information technology, which is our own in-house network services and database management. Homeland Security, which has a lot to do with keeping us safe in the event of national and other kinds of emergencies. our maintenance function, roadway maintenance, transportation data and analysis, which is part of our planning function and our keeping track of how much traffic is on the roads and where is it going, and then traffic security and operations, which manages our regional traffic management center, which is at our Metro Division office and other offices. And then all of the things that you would typically think of related to traffic, like speed limits and signs, things like that. And then we have a state aid division because the state constitution provides that the gas tax and tab fees and now the MVEST go into a highway user tax distribution fund from which is distributed money to three places, including local governments. And Abby will talk about that more. But we have a division that manages that function for the counties and the cities. And then we have a division that manages all of our district operations. And then if you turn to the next page, you can see we have a map here. The state is divided into eight districts, a metro district, and seven additional districts. And if you look in your packet, on the left side of the packet, there's another organization chart, and on that chart are phone numbers for all of the office directors that are listed on the chart that's in your packet, so that if you have questions that concern any of those particular functions, you can feel free to just pick up the phone. You can call me, or you can call one of these office directors and ask for assistance. And then behind that is another sheet, MnDOT districts, and it also shows the counties on the maps. Because we have a lot of liaison with county engineers, this map also shows the names and the phone numbers for our district engineers, who are always very happy to hear from legislators. And, in fact, it's true. And then during the legislative session, our district engineers will be coming over to the legislature, calling to make appointments to visit with the legislators who represent the districts that are in their MnDOT district. And in the metro area, because it's so dense and we have so much going on here, if you look at the third thing on the left side of your packet, it says MnDOT Metro Program Delivery on the top of it. Our metro area is divided into four parts, four quadrants, and we have an area manager sort of in charge of keeping track of and coordinating the project planning activities in each of those quadrants. And you can also feel free to call the area manager, if you're from the metro area, the area manager who's assigned to the area that your district is in. And those area managers typically also call the legislators who represent the area that they're responsible for and come in during the first year of the biennium to get acquainted and to see what's on your mind about transportation in your district. So feel free to contact MnDOT people whenever you need anything from them. And then if you go back to your packet and turn to page 4. Yes. Oh, this. Yeah. I think of this as a packet, but this is the... handout, yeah. The green one. on page 4, thank you, it says state transportation systems. When the legislature created the Department of Transportation, they put in statute a list of goals for the department. And I'm just going to read you a little short list that's not on this page, but I thought later, well, it would be useful just to mention what the legislature thought its goals were for MnDOT. And they include some of the following. And the first one is provide safe transportation for users. So safety is very important to MnDOT. And then the second one was to develop a multimodal transportation system for mobility and economic development. And others are encourage tourism, provide a reasonable travel time for commuters, provide transit statewide, assure planning consistent with the environmental goals of the state, provide an air transportation system, and to promote the use of bicycles for efficiency. And so all of those activities are encompassed by the systems that we manage, and those systems are the highway system, which has roughly 12,000 miles in the trunk highway system, which is really the state highway system. The law refers to it as a trunk highway system, but by that we always mean the state highway system. And the truck freight shipped over those roads, the last year we have a number for was 2001, was about 636 million tons, which if you look below can see is about three times the amount of tons shipped by rail and a great deal more than is shipped by water. And then we have a water and a rail freight function. Our responsibilities with respect to water are to administer grants to ports, of which there are several in the state, Duluth, Savage, Winona, and Red Wing. And so we have an office that administers grants to ports, and we also make grants for a Minnesota Rail Service Improvement System, which was put in place to help rehabilitate short line and other regional rail systems so that shippers could get their goods to market. And right now that's a loan program with a revolving fund, payments back to that fund. And then, as I said earlier, we also administer grants from both state and federal funds to transit systems in 73 greater Minnesota counties and also to some cities, such as St. Cloud, Rochester, Duluth, Moorhead. And there were 9.6 million trips provided in 2005. We have an aviation system function. Our Office of Aeronautics assists with planning and grants for capital projects at Minnesota airports. There are 136 public airports, and we receive money from the federal government every year to make grants to airports, and we also receive state revenues that come from taxes levied on aviation fuel, aircraft registration, and airline flight property tax. And then in addition, we have a bicycle and pedestrian program. There's a state bicycle committee that assists in designing bikeways. This state is one of the, if not the most heavily traveled by bicycle state. It's close to the top. And then with respect to pedestrians, one of the major activities there now is administering federal funds that were provided through the last Federal Authorization Act for a Safe Routes to School program. We have $9.4 million to distribute over the next 5 years, a part of that in each year, to make grants that can be to public or private entities to make it safer for children to get to school. And those grants can be used for, I think, three different things in particular. They can be used for infrastructure, for example, building sidewalks or crosswalks. They can be used for education, and they can also be used for enforcement. And we have someone who administers that program and a website on that program, too. And then if you turn to the next page, page 5, this page is in here just to give you an idea of how fast the vehicle miles of travel are growing in Minnesota. It has three lines on it, and it's indexed to 1980. And if you look at the bottom line there, you can see that from 1980 to 2005, Minnesota's population grew 26%. From 1980 to 2005, employment grew by 54%. But from 1980 to 2005, the number of miles traveled by vehicles on our highways grew by 98%. The amount of use that our highways are getting is tremendously outpacing the growth in employment and population, and that is what is putting the stress on our system and creating the congestion that you see. And then if you turn the page to page 6 and look at the next page, this is just to give you an idea of how many different kinds of road systems there are in the state. If you look at the first column, this shows you out of the total about 132,000 miles of roads in Minnesota, 9% of those are state highways. But if you look at the column next to it, those roads see almost 60% of the vehicle miles traveled. And then we have county state aid highways. Those comprise 22% of the roads in Minnesota, and about 23% of the miles traveled are on county state aid roads. And then you can read on down, municipal state aid streets are about 2% of the miles, but about 8% of the traffic is on those roads.
Mr. Chairman?
Township roads have the most miles. They're 42% of all the roads in Minnesota, but only 2% of the traffic is there because of their rural nature. And many of those are not even paved. So that is to sort of put in perspective what the road system is. And then I would like to show you one more thing. That is in the orange packet that you have. And that is this sheet that shows an example of our construction planning process, the long and winding road to construction. We developed this sheet. It has a front and a back, just because we get questions from people sometimes about why does it take so long to get a road developed and built? And this is a very brief answer. If you look at the front of this page, there are basically four steps in that process, long-range planning, and our planning horizon is about 30 years. Project development, which goes through multiple steps, and then construction, and then operation and maintenance, which is taking care of the road after it's built. And then if you look at the graphic that's here, these are various steps. These are some but not all of the steps in the planning process. Identify transportation needs, which is done with local partners. A lot of people are involved in this, the Metropolitan Council, counties, cities, many stakeholder groups that are interested in roads in their area. Project selection, it goes through design that has a preliminary design phase, where we look at where's the right place to put the road, what kind of road should it be. We have to do environmental studies. We design plans. We buy land. And you can follow this road along. And then below it is sort of a timeline for a 10-year process, basically. And on the back, there's text that explains it further. So if you, that's all I'm going to say about it today. And if you have further questions about this, we have a number of people in the audience who can answer more detailed questions about these things. And also you can feel free to call for any additional information you need. And so now I'll turn it over to Ms. McKenzie.
Hey, Mr. Chair.
Senator Langstaff.
Could you explain that design-build concept as compared to what you've got on this chart?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Senator Langseth, the design, well, first of all, let me tell you what it's not. Before we had authority to do design build, basically MnDOT engineers would design a road project from start to finish. They would develop the plans and specifications for it that would tell whoever was going to build it exactly what to build and exactly how to build it, how much concrete, how much steel, all of that, and then we would put those plans out for bid, and they would be advertised for a period of time, and construction companies would submit bids, and state law required us to award the bid to the lowest responsible bid. And we did not make any attempt to determine if, all we looked at was lowest responsible bid. Part of being responsible involved being able to file a bond and things like that. But there are sometimes times when that's not necessarily the best way to get a complicated project designed or the fastest way to get something built on the road. And so we sought authority from the legislature to have the design-build process. And in that process, we decide the department, in its planning process, decides where it wants to have a road. And I'll use the Rochester Trunk Highway 52 example, because that was built with the design-build method. We knew we needed to do something to Trunk Highway 52, and so there was the site of the road. We did what are roughly called 30% plans. In other words, we did most of the preliminary engineering and part of the design to get sort of a basic idea about what kind of design we wanted for the road. And then Following the law that the legislature passed, we used a two-step process. The first part of the process, we put out something called a request for qualifications, and we asked contractors to tell us basically information that shows us that they are qualified to do highway design and to do highway construction. And then under the law, we can narrow that down to five is usually. We try to get five, but if it's fewer, we can have as few as two. And then we shortlist the most qualified responders, and then we put out another much bigger package for the review of contractors, and that is called a request for proposals. And we ask them to tell us, how would you design this road, and how much would it cost? Now, we actually have an engineer's estimate, but that is a little bit flexible depending on the project. And we tell them, sometimes we give them a project. Instead of saying design a bridge using, you know, arches or trusses or whatever, or steel or concrete or how many yards of this or that, we tell them we need a bridge. Propose a design to us. And they might be aware of some cost-saving methods. They can actually propose cost-saving methods where we have started design on something. But then they submit to us a proposal that combines both the design of the project and the construction of it. And then we have a technical review committee that includes department engineers. It could include a local engineer if the project has a big effect on the local government. And it includes a representative of the Associated General Contractors, which is the, and this is by, required by law, the state organization that represents highway construction contractors. And they go through an extremely complicated evaluation process, and they come up with a score evaluating the technical expertise and design. And then after we have that score, we have a regular bid letting day, and on that day, a separate price proposal from the contractor is opened. And there's a calculation of those two things, and we award it to the best value proposal. So it's not low bid, but it is best value. And that is what makes it different from the low bid method.
Senator Moore.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Parker, can you share with the committee, where do disadvantaged minority contractors fall in that scheme of contract?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Moi, disadvantaged contractors participate in both situations. I should probably, this is not my area of expertise, but it's my understanding that the department, well, we do two things. The department runs programs to provide education for minority contractors, to tell them about programs in which they can participate in our construction program. So we educate them and provide them information about our activities. The other responsibility that the department has is that we are required to monitor the performance of the contractor who gets the bid in his hiring of suppliers and subcontractors. And we operate to some extent under both state and federal law. And there's a goal that is set for participation of minority contractors in MnDOT construction contracts. And we monitor our contracts. We monitor the activity of the contractor in securing the required goal for participation of minority contractors.
Follow up, Mr. Chair. Ms. Parker, and is that a goal that's concrete, or is that a goal that is depends on the projects? It wavers up and down.
It's flexible. It depends on the project. Kevin's coming up, but it depends.
Okay.
It's set for each project.
I think that's a question where we should have Kevin answer, Mr. Gray answer a few more, provide the answer here.
Mr. Gray, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chair Murphy, Senator Mwad, committee members. The DBE program on design-build projects in whole is very similar to the design-build projects, except there are a couple unique features. One, in the bidding process, we ask the contractors to come up with a specific plan on how they're going to achieve the goal and to demonstrate good faith efforts towards that goal. Secondly, we afford the contractors an opportunity to meet all of the interested minority contractors in advance of the actual final proposal. So there's a bit of an opportunity for each DBE contractor to be in front of the proposed bidding or the short list of bidders. That's something that we have because of the design-build contract, typically the scale and the speed of it, that facilitates an interaction between the prime contractor and giving them a knowledge base of the DBE community and the contractors therein. So the goal is not it becomes a static firm or fixed goal at the point that we bid the project. However, like any project, whether it's design-build or design-bid-build, that goal is subject to a series of efforts to ensure that the contractor has made good faith efforts towards the goal. If they don't realize it, or if they do realize it or exceed it, obviously good faith efforts aren't an issue at that point in time.
One last follow-up, Mr. Chair. And so, Mr. Gray, if the goal is not met, is there a penalty or a consequence that's built into the contract?
Chair Murphy and Senator Moi, yes, there is an opportunity under federal regulations to put a penalty or other compliance penalties in place, if you will. That is not typically the case. The bigger scrutiny becomes on the good faith efforts of the contractor to meet the goal. And the accepted practice is to review those first, and if good faith efforts have been made, for instance, if the minority contractor or DBE contractor community has not bid on projects, there's not an expectation either on the design bid build or design build approach to the construction contract for that contractor to meet that goal, but they have to facilitate, and there's an expectation at the federal level for the contractor to make outreach efforts to minority contractors given that opportunity to participate.
Well, Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Ms. Parker, on your chart on page 6, this is just a technical question, are the U.S. highways and interstates counted as a part of the state trunk highways?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson, yes, U.S. and interstate highways are part of the state highway system.
And Mr. Chairman, then, and I know we're not dealing with budget things, but do federal monies, are they the priority for federal monies, or are we having to invest a lot of state dollars also into federal highways?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson, they're not a priority for federal monies because of their status as having a federal name attached to them.
So Mr. Federal Chairman, does the federal name only mean that they connect, that they are in fact interstate, or that they connect from border to border, or what is the significance of a federal or U.S. designation?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson, I don't know where the U.S. highway designation came from. I assume it was from some time quite a ways back. There might be someone here who could answer that. The interstate system, though, was developed under the Interstate Highway System Act that was passed by Congress in 1956, and the funding for the development of those routes was 90% federal, 10% state. And those routes were, they were developed in discussions with the Federal Highway Administration. They are to serve partly a defense function, and so that's... there was a lot of discussion about which routes. One of the points of that was that there would be an interstate highway in every state, and there is a certain amount of mileage, and that they would connect important points. Okay. But I'm sorry, but I can't say. Do you know about the U.S. highways?
The National Highway System was established as part of the first ICT.
Yeah, but that...
Well, Mr. Chairman, it's not a matter of urgency, but curiosity. So if you run across it, I'd be interested.
I would guess that it might go back to the old Bureau of Public Roads before there was even a U.S. Department of Transportation. But we can check on that.
Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ms. Parker, I'm interested in your response, and I have a little better understanding of design-build. I have a little better understanding of design-build now. You mentioned the Highway 52 project. I think there was a couple other bridges that were built that way. You have a couple years of experience with it. How is it going? I think that the rationale behind design-build was you're probably going to save some money doing that. Is the department feel like it's been a good direction to go with some of the projects or not?
Well, Ms. Parker, when we go through the budget, Nelray Sukio from District 6 down there can answer that. And I think that if you don't mind me kind of answering for Nelray a little bit, but they were ecstatic about the progress. It seems it might have cost a smidgen more than if we would have done it the regular way, but we got the process done in 3.5 years versus 8. So the people in the Rochester area are plenty happy with the way it went. With any other project, there's always a couple of hiccups along the way, and I think we're still kind of cleaning up a few of those. But when we have the district engineers in, that'll be a good question for Nelray. She'll be able to give you a full answer to that.
And Mr. Chairman, Mr.
Senator Olson,
I believe that the third lane on 494 from Highway 394 to down through Eden Prairie was done by design build, and that came in, you know, on time and within budget. And I've never heard so many expressions of appreciation for the way in which it was done, as well as the ultimate result. So it seems to me that system is proving itself. But it'd be interesting to get a little bit more elaboration on people's engineering experience with that.
Yeah, and Senator Olson, I think you're going to find out from talking with the professional engineers that design build probably doesn't work in every case. But in the areas where it can be used effectively, then. Mm-hmm. It's probably a good way to attack things these days with the up and down or the ebb and flow of our budgeting process, the way that it's went here in the past few years, because, you know, there's been so much of this. It helps get projects on the board, and it kind of evens out that funding.
And Mr. Chairman, is partly a factor budget, but isn't there something to do with the complication of the project that it often offers a little more flexibility in dealing with, rather than having to try to resolve everything up front? Or how does that work?
Ms. Parker.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson, I'm not exactly sure what your question is. Are you asking if
the level of complexity of the project is design build It seemed to be chosen in projects that have a higher level of complexity than more straightforward ones, that it works just as well or maybe better to go the traditional method?
Yes. I would say yes, that's true. And the point that Senator Murphy made about saving time is very important to MnDOT. It's a very good method for saving time.
Mm-hmm.
And it does lend itself to projects that are complex.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, in that process of saving time, I mean, if you figure in what you're going to save on, you know, material costs buying today versus tomorrow, it kind of washes out in the end on the overall cost. Because when you go into a design build, it's not like the traditional way of building roads where you pretty much know exactly what's going to happen, when it's going to happen, how much it's going to cost. Sometimes you can run into sinkholes, for example, and yeah, you have to deal with it as you come along. And so there's some ways that the cost may be driven up, but overall you get the project delivered a lot faster. And I know that, you know, especially in the metropolitan area, people are clamoring to get the weave done, do the crosstown, do the 212 or whatever it might be, and people... You know the way it is. You got 70-some thousand constituents knocking on your door. They want it done, and they wanted it done like 6 months ago. And this is one way that we can kind of push some of these projects to the front.
Mr. Chairman, it's called Highway 12, that bypass through Long Lake Orono. they wanted that yesterday. But the cost, the time saving is mm-hmm. also for the end users. It saves mm-hmm. them time and probably gas, which means that they have to pay less gas tax, which I probably shouldn't remind
well,
them.
Well, then maybe we better scrap that project. No, I'm kidding. So. Ms. McKenzie, are you done?
I'm finished.
Okay, thank you.
For the record, I'm Abby McKenzie, and I'm the director of the Office of Investment Management, and I'm going to take you through the rest of your PowerPoint presentation here. If you go to page 7, you'll see a diagram of MnDOT's planning and programming process. Everyone got that? This is the planning and programming process that we use in MnDOT to make our transportation investment decisions. The process begins with our strategic plan that establishes our vision, our mission, and our strategic directions. Next, the statewide transportation plan establishes the policies and performance goals to implement our strategic directions. The district plans and modal plans follow, identifying the investments needed to achieve our performance goals and priorities within the forecasts of currently available revenues. Projects, so now if you move over into the gray box with the little green boxes in it, you can see that projects emerge out of our planning process. In the bottom half of the gray box, you can see they begin the project development process, and Betsy talked to you a little bit about that, so I'm not going to say anything more. And in the top half, they get programmed for construction. And then finally, as you move to the orange box, the project is constructed and then the system operated and maintained. And I'm going to say a little bit more about each of these stages in our planning and programming process. The first stage is the strategic plan, and in your packet on the right-hand side, you have your blue 2003 strategic plan. The basic content and format of MnDOT's strategic plan was established in 1996 and has remained constant through three administrations, with each administration updating the strategic plan to reflect its unique focus and objectives. If you go to the next page, I'll go over the three strategic directions in our strategic plan. These strategic directions have been constant since 1996. The next page, okay, I got everyone confused. The next page in the PowerPoint presentation as opposed to the next page in your strategic plan. The first strategic direction is safeguard what exists, and this reflects MnDOT's top priority as our commitment to preserving the existing transportation system in safe and sound condition. The second strategic direction is make the system operate better, and this is our commitment to making strategic and targeted investments to improve the transportation system. And the third strategic direction is to make MnDOT work better, and this is our commitment to continually improve our internal management and processes to be more effective and efficient as an organization. If you go to the next PowerPoint slide, now is everybody with me here? Page 10 of the PowerPoint presentation. The statewide transportation plan, you also have the executive summary of that in your packet on the right-hand side of your packet, so you can look at that at your leisure. The 2003 statewide transportation plan was MnDOT's first performance-based long-range plan. It established performance measures and targets and then uses those goals in directing investment decisions. The plan established preservation as our top priority. Another theme of the plan was to create best value for the citizens and also to take innovative approaches to improving our work by meeting lowest life cycle cost preservation standards, by making low-cost system improvements, and by improving the efficiency of our service delivery, to name just a few. If you take the next page, you can see the policy framework established in the statewide plan. There are 10 policies in the statewide plan, and they align with those three strategic directions that I described to you earlier. I'm not going to go over them in detail. I'll summarize them very briefly. There are three policies under the strategic direction safeguard what exists. The first is to preserve the essential elements of the existing transportation system in safe and sound condition. The next is to support land use decisions that preserve the mobility and enhance the safety of our transportation systems. And finally, the last policy is to effectively manage the operation, snow plowing, traffic signals, and the like of our existing transportation system to provide maximum service to our customers. The second strategic direction is to make the transportation system operate better, and that's where we're talking about our targeted improvements. We've got four policies in that area. One is to provide cost-effective transportation options for transit and freight. The second is to enhance mobility between interregional corridors in the state, linking our interregional trade centers. The next is to enhance mobility within our regional trade centers. And our final policy is to ensure the safety and security of the transportation system and its users. Finally, the last three policies. The first seven policies are about our commitments and our policies about investing in the transportation system. The last three policies are really about how we manage MnDOT internally. And you can see the three policies there are to improve our internal management, inform and involve our customers and stakeholders, and finally, to protect the environment and respect community values. If you go to the next page, each statewide plan policy is supported by a statement of the outcomes we expect from that policy, performance measures, our measurable goals in each of those policy areas, performance targets, and then guidance for use of that policy where guidance existed. After the statewide transportation plan, the modal and district plans identify the investments we need to meet our performance goal and set priorities within the current forecast of available revenues. You have the executive summary in your packet of the district long-range plans that identify both our investment needs to meet our performance goals and what our priorities will be within projected available revenues. Now, if you turn the page to page 13, this diagram illustrates MnDOT as a performance management agency. We not only set performance measures for our statewide and long-range plan, but we set measures in every step of our decision-making process. And this pyramid kind of illustrates that. The performance measures in our statewide plan are really our highest-level performance measures and targets. But each step of our decision-making process, there are additional performance measures that help guide those investment decision-making process. And you can see down the right-hand side the various steps, the various kinds of plans and investment decision-making tools we have, and then kind of the horizon for those investment decisions. And it goes all the way, as I said, from the statewide plan, which is a, 20 or 30-year plan, depending on which plan you're looking at, down to the performance targets and measures that we use actually on a daily operating basis. And in your packet is a snapshot that summarizes a number of these key performance areas and the targets and measures we use in each of them. And it can be a little overwhelming, but this is actually a document we produce each year. It's reviewed with the senior management team, and we go into detailed reports with the district engineers on a quarterly basis. So it's a lot of information, but it gets used very actively in the organization. And I'm just going to highlight a little bit so you know how to read the chart, and then highlight what are a couple of accomplishments that we're really proud of. So if you can see down the left-hand side of the chart in those yellow boxes, those are our big budget activity areas. And then across the top, you can see there's a description of the measure, the status of the year before. This report was done in June 22nd of 2006, so this would have been the 2005 results. Then the current status, a little bit of trend information, the statewide average performance measure, a forecast of for those areas where we do forecast, of what our performance is going to look like in the years ahead, and then that final column is the actual performance data. Now, just so you can read the key, you can see it at the top, and when we have a green circle, it means we have met our performance measure, our target in that area. If it's yellow, it's slightly below target, and if it's in red, it's below target and needs corrective action. So I'm this is kind of daunting. I know I'm just going to go over three or four of these for you. The first one, the very top line, is our pavement quality in good condition on our principal arterial system. And that's the measure is RQI, Ride Quality Index. And you can see in the far right that our goal was to be 70% of our principal arterials to be in good condition or better. And in the year before this, we were in yellow, so we were slightly below that 70% level. And in 2005, we remained slightly below that level. But you can see from the trend data that while we remained below our 2002 level, our condition improved from 2004 to 2005. And I was just in the new presentation from the materials folks that our pavement condition on our principal arterials actually improved again from 2005 to 2006. A couple of other ones I want to highlight for you is the congestion one, and it's about, two-thirds of the way down that first yellow box. And congestion, it says, percent of miles of urban freeways that are congested. And you can see in 2004 we were in yellow, and we were below, that meant we were slightly below our goal of 21.5, no more than 21.5% of our urban freeways being congested. By 2005, we had actually reached that goal, and there are preliminary data shows that in 2006 we'll actually have exceeded that goal, being at 20.6% of urban freeways congested. And, as a planner, this is kind of a remarkable thing, because when we were developing the statewide plan, we actually didn't think we could get congestion to decline. Our goal was actually to just slow the growth in congestion. But because of projects like Trunk Highway 100, 494, the McKnight Interchange, we've actually seen a measurable decline in congestion now for two consecutive years. So we're kind of amazed by that. Another one that I want to point out to you is fatalities on all roads. And this is one we are, frankly, just tremendously proud of. I have that.
Which one?
When we established the performance measure and target for that in 2003, we set a goal of having fatalities decline from 630 a year and growing to 550 a year by 2020. That was our goal. When the Comprehensive Highway Safety Plan was established the next year, they established a very aggressive goal of getting down to 500 fatalities a year by 2008. And we've just received the 2006 fatality report of only 480 fatalities. This is just a tremendous success. It's a tremendous thing we're proud of. We really have to recognize our partners in DPS, because all five E's come into play here. The engineering, the education, the enforcement, the emergency response have all really, really contributed to this. This is all fatalities on all systems, and obviously our partners in the counties and cities had a lot to do with this. But we just got a note from DPS last week specifically identifying our cable medium barrier program as significantly contributing to this wonderful result that we've achieved. So we're just really proud of it.
Yes, Ms. McKenzie, I think the whole state can revel in the fact that some of the carnage on our roads is drastically reduced, and a lot of it has to do with safety measures like cable median barriers. I was wondering if the department I'm sure you guys can get the data, but where are the deaths occurring today versus 5 years ago? I think we'll still find that the rural two-lane roads, and especially in greater Minnesota, is where the brunt of those are happening. And those fatality rates, I don't think, have dropped as drastically as they have in the metropolitan area. And you're right. It's a combination of a lot of different things. But I think that law enforcement, emergency management, or emergency services personnel probably have a lot more to do with it than anything else outside of things like cable median barriers, because if you can prevent head-ons, that's a perfect thing to do to avoid any type of collision. But I think that you know a large portion of the credit not only is the working between all the agencies, but I think it's got a lot to do with people modifying some behaviors on the road.
Education and enforcement are mm-hmm. are the top strategies.
Yeah, I tend to agree. Senator Rest, did you have a question?
Yes, please. thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I also want to express my appreciation for me and Senator Bonoff for the cable medium barriers along 169 and 494. And it was, I don't think it was less than a week after they were put up that someone's life was saved because the medium barrier stopped them in Plymouth. So it definitely works, and someone was able to go home to their family and not to a funeral home. I am looking at the colors on your chart.
Yes.
And blinking at the colors because I see a blue there, I think, and I don't understand what the blue is. And if you look at in the second big chunk of the yellow going down for ROW processing time.
Yeah,
that looks blue to me. And then if you look over in the green, yellow, red thresholds, yeah. There's four there.
Yeah.
So what is the distinction, and does am I my eyes not seeing blue or shouldn't be seeing blue, or what's the deal here?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Rest, that is light green. And there's this distinction between the dark green, which is fully meet the goal, and light green, which is meet the goal. And I really can't tell you a lot more between those two. Betsy, this is mm-hmm. this is right-of-way timeliness, which is truly not my area. Mm-hmm. Do you know?
Senator Murphy, Senator Rest, all I can tell you is that I know that this is an area where we have been improving that under the statewide average, that 16.2 stands for the number of months, the average number of months it took to acquire right-of-way for a project. That's down from 19 months a couple years ago. I don't know why it's light green instead of green, but it's definitely improving.
No, they don't.
I think it was a faulty printer.
In that, Mr. Chairman, in that a semicircle thing that's there.
Yeah,
it's
good.
Definitely four different,
yeah. Yeah.
Different pies there.
Right.
So I'm
so
just
we need
trying
to
understand
what each of those means.
What the
key up here, light green.
We'll
what the key
up.
Is.
Yep.
Thank you.
So then if you turn the page, so you can see the first group is state roads investment. The second group is construction project development, of which Senator Rest has highlighted one. If you turn the page, you see the same again. These are our operations and maintenance performance measures and targets. Those ones highlighted in yellow are the ones that we get directly from our market research. So this is our direct customer type performance measures. Again, down the left-hand side are our product and services grouped by our budget activities. I'll highlight snow and ice. That's our top priority in our operations and maintenance, and we have continued to meet our targets there. The next is traffic management. A number of these are new measures. They came out of our new highway system operating plan, where we develop performance measures and targets sometimes for the first time in some of our operating areas, because we believe that there's so much to be gained both in service to the customer and in efficiency in working on those traffic management areas. Fleet management, roadsides, then the buildings and electronic communications. So you can see the snapshot. This is a good summary of the performance measures and targets that we look to and our managers manage every day. At the bottom of that table are the summary, kind of the roll-up of these areas. So you can see that state road investments one. This is a summary of all the performance measures in that area. So where you see the green and then the green circle. In 2005, you can see we had five in green. In 2006, as of that report, we had six that had gone to green. In 2005, we had 12 that were in the yellow. That had gone down to 11 in the yellow. And then we have zero in red in that state roads group.
And then the bottom part of that table is the three-year trend data, so you can see the number where we have performance measures that are improving. That's the green arrow up, the number where we're staying the same, and then the number where our performance measures are declining. So that's just a summary of that, and it's got all of our warts and blemishes on it for all of you to behold.
Mr. Chair.
If you would move now to page 14 of your presentation.
Ms. McKenzie, Senator Dibble has a question here.
Pardon me.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. McKenzie, I was just curious about the public satisfaction measure. Generally, by what means do you take that measure? Do you do telephone surveys, or how do you gauge the level of public satisfaction?
Right. This is many of these in this maintenance area are done through an annual survey, our market research survey. We contract out for that. They're all telephone surveys.
Thank you.
Yeah, random selection mm-hmm. telephone
research. Great. Thank you.
We could play some real tomfoolery here. It depends on where you set the bar about what your expectation is. Because I get a lot of phone calls, and maybe it's just me from being the chair, but most of the calls I get aren't the yellow kind of calls. They're more towards the red side.
I believe that.
Like they're really hot and mad, and so I don't know. Senator Olson.
Well, Mr. Chair, I don't know if I'm interpreting this right, but I was looking at the three categories in the summary, the state roads investment versus the construction project development management operations and maintenance, and your bottom, the trend is worsened is in the investment, and yet it's improved in the other two categories. I must be misinterpreting this, but are we doing more with less money?
Ms. McKenzie.
Mr. Chair, Senator Olson, we like to do more. We do our best to do more with less money. We do our best to get the best results we can within the revenues we have. We think we've had some wonderful successes in the last few years, but there are plenty of red stop signs that indicate that we have more work to do as well.
Mm-hmm. But Mr. Chair, am I interpreting that we actually are seeing improvement even at the same time that we've had less to work with? Is that the significance of that comparison is, or am I misreading it or misinterpreting it?
Well, you can
just the three bottom categories.
Yeah,
the summaries.
It means that in state infrastructure, we've actually improved in six of our measures. We've actually declined in 10 of the measures over the last 3 years. In operations, we've improved in 11. We've declined in 6. In operations and maintenance, we've improved in 10, and we've declined in 5. Does that mean we're doing more with less? It means we're working as hard as we can.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thanks.
This is a pretty busy document.
It
here,
is. It's so. A lot to take in, but mm-hmm. it's a real MnDOT document, and it's a really good illustration, I think, of how we do try to be a performance management organization. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Rest.
Just one more question about that. How often do you produce this document? How frequently is it distributed in the department?
Mr. Chair, Senator Rest, this document is updated once a year, but each of these reports come out on their own cycle. For example, the state roads infrastructure reports come out individually and are quarterly reviewed in detail by the district engineers. They just received the 2006 pavement report yesterday. Then the commissioner quarterly gets additional reports summarizing the measures. So the big reports are at least on a quarterly basis. For example, our snow plowing results are reported to us after the end of each snow event.
So, Mr. Chairman, so We would expect the next one to be somewhere around the third week of June in 2007.
Yes.
Cinema.
Ms. McKenzie, does DEB participation in our construction projects not rise to the level of being one of the performance measures on this chart?
We have a, Mr. Chair, mm-hmm. Senator Moo, we have a whole set of measures in the workforce and business development area. They're not my expertise. If you would like to know more about them, mm-hmm. I think Kevin could come and speak more about them. Mm-hmm. They're just not in this particular report, but they are part of the quarterly reports that go to the commissioner and the executive management team.
Well, Mr. Chair, Ms. McKenzie, whoever is has those performance measures, I would like them to come and talk to me, since I might be the only one interested in that. Thank you.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just wondering, Ms. McKenzie, are there, granted, I don't have the detail behind all of the indexes and measures that inform each line item. So I'm just curious, when you measure congestion, for example, are you just counting the number of cars that are moving through a particular area or counting heads as well? The efficiency of moving, some of those measures that measure the true efficiency of our system as balanced against cost? And are there ways of, because I assume some of these measures inform where the priority investments are going to be made for purposes of planning future spending.
Yes.
Are there measures about what the corresponding anticipated or resulting land use is of transportation facilities that are going to be either expanded or built new? Those sorts of measures, are they contained in this document? Effect on pollution, the effect of pollution on some of these as well. There's some of those associated measures or surrogate measures, and I'm wondering if they're taken into account. These seem to be very literal measures of
yes.
traffic and pavement and things like that.
Senator Murphy, Mr. Chair, Senator Dibble, the congestion measures, there's a group of congestion measures. The one that's reported here is the percent of miles congested, and we measure that as the travel speed during peak times is being 45 miles an hour or less. But there are actually a whole set of congestion measures, and I'm not personally aware of the details on those. The environmental measures, we have a set of environmental measures that are in the state plan. Some of these you can actually see here. Don't we have wetlands? Oh, EIS duration. No, we don't have those there. Wetland replacement, meeting air quality, those are state plan measures, so there are a set of those. Land use measures, we do not have as good a fix on.
Mr. Chair, well, that may be some of the information that Senator Moi is looking for as well for purposes of economic development planning as it relates to our transportation system.
Ms. McKenzie, I just, real quick, looking through here, I was wondering if you have kind of a similar document for some of the other things you do, rail service, barges, rural transit, for example. If you've got another document that addresses some of the, smaller yet important functions of your department, if you've got something like that for those, we'd appreciate seeing them too.
Yes, Mr. Chair, there are quarterly modal performance measure reports that cover each of the modal areas that you just talked about, and we'd be glad to share those.
Okay, great. You don't have to do that today, just whenever is fine.
Yep.
Thank you. All right, any more questions about the busy document? And we're going to move along, and Ms. McKenzie, if you want to walk us through the rest of the presentation.
Just very, only three slides left. We're on page 14. You will hear a lot about MnDOT finances in our biennial budget presentation, but especially for the new members, just a very high, maybe 300,000 feet look at MnDOT finances. This first chart shows major revenue sources to the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund. As our executive budget officer always says, just remember 3 in and 3 out. And so the three revenue sources in are the gas tax, our TAB fees, and the motor vehicle sales tax. You can see at this point we are about 50% of our revenues from gas tax. This is 2006, and 50% from those other two sources. This is prior to the passage of the constitutional amendment. And then they go through the highway user trust fund in the constitutionally specified formula of 62% to the trunk highway fund, 29% to county state aid, and 9% to municipal state aid. If you turn to page 15, then this is the trunk highway fund. And so you can see that coming out of that highway user tax distribution fund in 2006, there was $750 million from that fund to the trunk highway fund. And then our other major source of revenue is our federal aid, and we had $361 million in federal aid agreements. Now, this is a very high level of summary. There's lots of other little sources of revenues and lots of other sources and lots of other expenditures, but this is just to kind of show you the major sources and major then uses of the fund. And at the bottom, then, you can see the major expenditures from the fund. Again, this is in 2006, and there was $69 million that went to DPS for their operations. $535 million went to MnDOT operations. $555 million went to state road construction, with another $143 million in bond funds to form about a $700 million construction program in 2006.
Mr. Chair, back on page 14, how does the gas tax and the TAB fees compare to 2005?
Oh, Scott would have to answer that.
Mr. Gray, do you have those numbers? Senator Langstaff, maybe you want to restate your question.
Yes, I just wanted the comparison between 2005 and 2006 on the gas tax and the TAB fees.
Chair Murphy and Senator Langstaff, we're meeting with staff and have been meeting with them in recent weeks, but I think it's safe to say that they're approximately the same or perhaps even down. And we'll give you a recap of the fees that went to the Trunk Highway Fund or to the HUTDF, because that impacts our counties and cities as well, for the last 3 years by type. And in fact, we've got some charts that we can go through with that that show that the gas tax is actually flattening or even declining from previous forecasts, at least. Mm-hmm. So we can give you that information. But it's approximately the same. Modest growth in the gas tax, maybe less than actual in 2005 or 6 for the TAB fees. And MVES is below what it was in 2005, is my recollection right now off the top. But I'd like to put those numbers together in a very simple fashion that's understandable and share that with the committee.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Bonoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. With regard to the MVES number, I'm surprised that it's as high as it is, because as I understand it, the projections with the passage of MVES is that we're looking at a projected $300 million to the Highway User Fund, and that currently it's just a portion of MVES that goes into this. And so if this is $161 million, and that's much more than one would expect, what portion of MVES goes into the Highway User Fund?
Mr. Chair and Senator, first, just give you kind of a quick overview of what the difference is, that currently what goes into the Highway User Distribution Fund is 30% of the MPES revenues.
Mm-hmm.
And just in rough terms, the trunk highway share of that 30% is 60%. And the balance, the other 40%, goes roughly to the counties and municipalities. In the original planning years, and I would say 3 or 4 years ago, we were using roughly $6 million of percent that was available to for each percent of the MVEST. That has declined in the last 3 years to closer to $5.25 million per percentage point, just roughly. So as we look at it, the $300 million that you heard, that was the dialogue around the amendment, was the $300 million more above what was going to transportation, both the Trunk Highway Fund, the 30%, or the HUTD Fund, 30%, plus what was going to Greater Minnesota Transit and to Metropolitan Transit, or Met Transit, which they had approximately another 24%. So approximately 54% of the MVEST monies were going to transportation purposes, and 46% remained in the general fund. The increment, this 46%, as you project it out, particularly if you assume there's going to be some growth in it, and I think that the forecast still look in future years for some growth in that the MVEST collections, that 46% was the $300 million of additional investment that would come over. Mm-hmm. In total, at one point in time, we were talking $600 million is the total MVEST. Realistically, at this point, I think that's closer to $510 million, $515 million or so at this point in time, mm-hmm. though we're still projecting that to grow a little bit on a percentage point basis. So in a nutshell, the $300 million that you heard was the increment, the layer that was in the general fund that would be added over and above. So there was a substantial portion of monies from the MVEST that were going to transportation in general. It was all statutorily dedicated, and the highway user fund piece of that was 30%, and our share of that was the number that you see in this chart.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. And Mr. Gray, when when the department comes to present their budget, you know, there's going to be the portion of the budget is also, these are the projections. Maybe you can bring your counterpart over here from revenue so that they can explain why they keep saying that that is going to keep going back up when it keeps losing and losing and losing, and they've continued to keep saying that it's going to go up. And I just want to know by what mechanism they, what indicators are they using? And if you could just bring them along to explain it, that'd be great.
Chair Murphy, we've got some really good information that I think that will show kind of the forecast versus the actual and a little bit of the history. And mm-hmm. we've worked with Ms. Parker in that regard, so we'll be prepared to present that information with the budget materials as well. I think it'll be very straightforward and help illuminate and address okay. a lot of the questions that are coming up today.
Thanks. Ms. McKenzie. Let's see if we can't whip through these in the
Mr.
next
Chair,
3 minutes.
There's one left. I
okay.
hope we can do it.
Let's go to the last page.
Just a little bit more about federal funding because it's always a topic of interest. I'm just pointing out how we receive our federal funds. And the first step in that process is a federal authorization act that establishes transportation funding for a, well, typically 6 year, sometimes 5 year period. The last one was Safety Lou. It was passed in 2005. We get formula funds, that's the majority of the dollars, but we also get earmarked funds. In Safety Lou, that represented 20% of all our federal funds came as federal earmarks. And so it's not of MnDOT funds, it's 20% of federal funds came as earmarked or HPP projects. And that represented 160-some percent increase over T21 levels. After an Authorization Act is passed, then Congress appropriates federal funds each year through an appropriations bill. And then finally, in Minnesota, and this is unique to Minnesota, that the determination of the spending of those federal funds, whether it's on the MnDOT system or on the local system, is done through our ATP process. And this is just a rough split of how the federal funds go in Minnesota.
Thank you, Ms. McKenzie. Senator Watt.
Mr. Chair, Ms. McKenzie, is it true that attached to the federal funding that comes to the state, there's permissive language that would allow the state to spend up to 1% of the federal funds to do apprenticeship programs and construction projects?
Mr. Chair, Senator Watt, yes, there is a new provision under, well, actually there was a somewhat more limiting provision under T21 that allowed us to do that, and then a more expanded version under Safety Lou that does allow us to do that.
And Mr. Chair, Ms. McKenzie, and is Minnesota doing that currently? Are we doing that, or do we have plans to do that, or are we not doing anything because it's permissive language?
Mr. Chair, Senator Moi, at this point, I don't believe we're participating in that program, and that's sort of all I know about it. So.
Senator Olsen.
Mr. Chair, thank you. First of all, I want to say that to all the MnDOT people that are here, I have seen MnDOT people in meetings that had the greatest courage, and I would be very afraid to have been in their shoes, whether it's new construction or whatever, and I'm sure you all came up through those ranks. Less than a month ago, I was sitting at a county board, and it was very frustrating. In our county, we had Highway 8, US 8, from Forest Lake to Taylor's Falls. It was identified as one of the highest fatality roads in the state. Yet, I don't believe we were on any MnDOT improvement plans. But that road was repaired, and it was repaired because we have a congressman who has a ranking. Now he is the chair of the Federal Transportation and Infrastructure Committee. And it's very, very frustrating. We did a bridge on 35. MnDOT wasn't much of a partner. I believe $11 million project, I think they were in under $100,000. And the county bonded quite a few dollars to do this project. And from the commissioner's side, you know, I know we're a small piece of the pie, but outstate Minnesota and county government has some real serious needs in transportation. And I saw in your report there, I saw the word innovation, but nowhere do I see utilizing these funds that we're going to have a congressman in a position. I believe in T. Lou, Minnesota was able to receive over $600 million of beyond the Federal Highway Trust Fund gas tax allotment. And yet, I don't see us moving to do the 1-to-5 match. And it's very concerning to me that we do not send a dollar back to the Federal Highway Trust Fund. And I know a lot of these projects do not fit in your 20-year plan, but I want to be sure that we secure every dollar we can and do these projects.
Mr. Chair, Senator Olson, the high-priority funds or the earmarked funds, as I talked about earlier, represented a very large increase from T21 to say T. And the problem for us as an organization with those funds is many of them are not funded in our 4-year step, our 10-year plan, or even our 20-year plan. So oftentimes those earmarks represent far less than 50% of the total cost of the project. So it's not just the 20% match. It's significantly more than that. And it takes us a while to work those projects into the program. We understand that our delegation to Congress, our senators and representatives, consider those important projects, and we're working very hard to get those into the program. But as all of our funds are committed to other projects, you can imagine it's very difficult for us to give up other projects in order to fund those projects. So each of the districts have worked very hard to respond to those HPP funds and to try to work them into the program, but it will take us a while to be able to respond to those. We don't intend to turn back those earmarked obligation authority. We never have, and we don't intend to start now, but it will take us a while to do that. The other thing I should say about that, I'm talking from a funding perspective because, of course, that's my job, but also from a project development perspective, many of those projects really haven't been developed at all. And so the whole, as Betsy talked about, the whole process of establishing a scope, a design, buying right-of-way, all of that, I mean, they are very early in that process and take quite a bit of work to move through. But we're committed to doing so, and we're working hard to do so.
I'll follow up, if I may. Well, one of the things I would say, thank you for doing that, and I think it's important that we don't send any money back to the Federal Highway Trust Fund, but I think there has to be some anticipation. This man's been there 32 years, and he's in one of the most powerful positions for transportation in the country right now.
Wait a minute now.
Oh, next to Senator Murphy. Excuse me.
All right.
Next to Senator Murphy, he may be the most powerful man in the country on transportation. And I think there has to be some flexibility in 20-year plans or whatever to say, you know, this is, And it's interesting to me because there's money for the Union Depot in St. Paul. There's money for all over the state, not just the 8th Congressional District. And I suspect there will be more. And I think we really need to be in a position as a state to say we can utilize these dollars.
Mm-hmm. And Mr. Chairman? Thank you, Senator Olsen. Before I call on you, Senator Olsen, the committee is going to make the some committee time available for Congressman Obestar next time he's in town so he can come and talk to us all. Ms. McKenzie, hopefully if this committee and this legislature do their job correctly, this issue of do we have enough money, do we not have enough money, hopefully that issue goes away. Anyway, hopefully that issue will go away. Senator Olson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, just a question that seemed you alluded to. If we don't turn back, do earmarks sunset? Or once authorized, are they there until you have a chance to meet the match and then can obtain them?
Mr. Chair, Senator Olson, yes, they're typically available until expended.
Until it's spent. So the earmarks, now we don't know what the earmark process, you know, they're trying to get rid of that altogether, which would cramp Congressman Oberstar's style greatly. So I don't know if they're going to change that process. But so in other words, ones that have been approved, we may not have been able to use them yet, but it isn't a matter of turning it back because they're still available. Okay, thank you.
Well, let's hope for good government's sake that they don't get too silly out there, Senator Olson, because now that our train is hooked onto the gravy trains, and. Ms. McKenzie and Ms. Parker, when we do our budget document, when you come to present for your budget process, not only the information that we asked Mr. Gray for earlier, is it going to be possible to have the district engineers here with a breakdown of their individual budgets? I would hope that it would be. I know that your budget is predicated on what the district engineers tell you, but we would like to have the district engineers here also to provide testimony and to make their budgets available.
Mr. Chairman, there's no problem with having the district engineers here.
Okay.
I'm not sure exactly what you mean about their budget, but we can clarify that with you, and we'll provide whatever information you wish to have.
Great, because I know that in the district that I'm in, it's much like everybody else's, that there's a lot of unmet needs. And some of these district engineers are kind of keeping a side sheet saying that, you know, it's X amount of dollars that we could spend if we had it available, or that we should be spending, I should say. So, with that, any more questions? Senator Larson?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And
then Senator Saltzman. Oh, okay.
Sorry. I don't know if it's a question. It's probably just a comment. But I think Senator Olsen raises an important issue that, frankly, I come from a district that had also a senior congressman and former Representative Sabo. And I remember being at a sort of a congratulatory luncheon for him at the Richfield Chamber of Commerce. Thanking him for his years of service, and one of the questions posed to Representative Sabo was, how can you help, how can the federal government help Minnesota with its transportation problem? Mm-hmm. And he said long term, without quoting former Representative Sabo, that the answer really is the federal government providing less because the state of Minnesota has put itself in a position of low flexibility, being able to react to matching federal dollars. And unfortunately, I think that's where we sort of get to, is that our federal representatives will have lower expectations in terms of what they're trying to reach for if we don't provide them those matching dollars. And so that's just, it's a comment, but I think Senator Olsen's questions underscore the need for us to address that, hopefully this session.
Thank you. Well, thank you. We appreciate it. And the committee is adjourned, and we'll meet again next week. Thank you. Thank you.
talking about because I was like,
did you mention it?
I was just about to say.
Oh, I thought that was
an issue.
Yeah.
I wanted to be public talking.